When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Manchester is Red podcast. My name is Stephen Railston. I'm back again. I'm sure everyone is relieved to hear after a mini hiatus from the podcast. And we're here today, recording on a Friday afternoon. I'm joined by Samuel Luckhurst. Samuel, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. You're back where you normally belong, but if anything, you should be in the Northeast this weekend. You've left at the wrong time, I think, given the huge game tomorrow. Is it Tyne Wear Derby? It's not Tyne Tees, is it?
When it's at the stadium, I'm like, yeah, I believe so. That's the correct way to put it. Nobody wants FA Cup upsets this weekend, Samuel. Put it that way. Manchester United fans, or any of our fans up and down the country, because of course United have that game against Wigan on Monday after the weekend, but. I believe you and Rich already kind of looked ahead to that game earlier in the week. So we're just going to have a look at a few transfer bits to start off this podcast today. Have a look at the situation with Jadon Sancho and Borussia Dortmund. Look at the contract situations with Rafa Varane and Anthony Martial. And look ahead in part three at the visit of Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Dave Brailsford to Carrington as well. I should say Sir. I'm denying him of his privileges there as well, because Sir Dave Brailsford is a Sir. Samuel, are you getting your knighthood anytime soon?
I don't think so, no. I think we're probably both on the same page in the honours system. It's not for me. I think I don't want to spend a whole podcast going on about the wrongs of it, but when Kevin Sinfield isn't getting the ultimate accolade, then there is something fundamentally wrong. I think Saeed Javid's got a knighthood, and he once said that ticket touts were entrepreneurs. So that's just one example of the flaws.
I was laughing watching the 10 o'clock news last night when David Cameron came up, and at the bottom it said Lord Cameron. Which wasn't a good way to go to bed. Anyways, Jadon Sancho then, Samuel, but let's get into the football because the listeners are probably about to turn off. Obviously, Borussia Dortmund are closing in on agreeing a loan deal for Sancho. He's been frozen out of the team since September. Obviously, a very public dispute with Erik ten Hag when he took to social media, essentially called him a liar. It took him a while to delete that post. He eventually did, but the situation, it hasn't been resolved. The January window was always going to be an opportunity for that resolution. It finally seems like we're going to have one with Dortmund kind of inching closer to securing him on a temporary deal.
Yeah, I think I even wrote back in September, not long after it happened, that Sancho was quite keen on returning to Dortmund, and Dortmund, it seems, are keen to have him back as well. Various colleagues have done those stories in the last 24, 48 hours. I've been off for a couple of days, but given it's the transfer window and then United rearranged a press conference, I've ended up doing a bit of work here and there. But United have confirmed that the discussions are progressing with Dortmund over Sancho. It had to happen. They were never going to sell him this month because there's just not a market for someone who's not played since August the 26th, I think it is. So he's gone 4 months without playing. Very public fallout with the manager, to the point that he's been banished from the first team squad. He's been in exile for nearly 4 months. He's been getting ready, getting changed in a locked, with the door locked in a separate building due to safeguarding issues, because he's been getting ready in the academy building at Carrington. So that's an extremely hard sell for a player who also has not particularly played well in his 2.5 years at United. He's had maybe a couple of reasonable spells of form, but his time at United has been one of extreme failure. Two very lengthy spells on the sidelines for very different reasons. One period when he had the support of Ten Hag, and this time when he's not had the support of Ten Hag. And I think we all sense that the likeliest outcome would be a loan this month. But really, from Ten Hag's perspective, he couldn't allow Sancho to be at the club when the January transfer window closed. I think it would have been extremely telling had both manager and player somehow still been at United, been at Carrington come February the 1st, because that would have immediately undermine Ten Hag's position. So this is essentially the first public backing, if you like, from Ineos that they're happy for Sancho to go elsewhere on loan. It was strange yesterday that one of the questions in relation to Sancho at Carrington, it was, does this indicate that he has a future at United? And you're asking the manager who's banished him from the first team squad. No, it doesn't. I mean, it's very obvious that because there's not a market to sign someone that United bought for £72.9 million 2.5 years ago, and nobody's going to be paying £30 million for him. There's not a rush to get Jadon Sancho in the January transfer window on a permanent basis. Of course, it was always going to be a loan, and it's a problem for United that Sancho, Van der Beek, there's still every chance that those two could be back at Carrington for the first day of pre-season in July. I mean, hell of a lot's going to happen between now and then, but it's still a possibility that could be the scenario, and it would be fascinating to see what happens between now and then. But Ten Hag also, just in terms of his communication at press conferences, and it's becoming clunkier, it feels like, as well, because he said last month, if you took his quotes at face value when he was asked about Sancho, he said he knows what he has to do. Now, anybody who hears that or watches that or reads that would think, oh, Sancho's got a future still at United, when there's been no inclination from either side to come to a resolution there, unsurprisingly. And it was strange yesterday that Ten Hag said there's no news on Sancho. Well, there is news. I mean, people at United have confirmed that discussions are progressing. And when a manager talks like that, he's undermining his own authority there, when actually he's still in a pretty authoritative position despite the results in recent months, or in fact throughout the whole season.
Who is it, Samuel? When you asked Ten Hag a question, was it Reguilón that he replied? But the way he said it, it made it sound like Sancho, and Sancho, everyone in the press conference room kind of just jolted for a second. And I think you followed it up and you asked about Sancho, didn't you? I can't remember exactly how it went.
I when he was giving me this answer to Sergio, I genuinely did think he said Sancho, but I thought if I acknowledge that it's Sancho, he said, I just thought, I can't say Sancho's name. I could look like an idiot here because I can't be certain that he had said Sancho's name. So I think I came up with something like kind of mealy mouth, like, and what prompted that development? It was a nothing. Well,
there was plausible deniability there, wasn't there? That's the thing. Yeah. You're in a difficult position and you had
exactly.
That fast.
I think I did okay in it. And then I checked with the press officer afterwards. He said, no, it was definitely Sergio was in Reguilón. And apparently Ten Hag, when it was put to him that, oh, people thought you said Sancho, I don't think he was best pleased by that either. And this was back in October. So that gives you an idea of what Ten Hag thinks of Sancho at the moment. He's still not referred to Sancho by name as well. Whenever he's been asked about him, he's never referred to Jadon or Sancho. That was the one time where we thought, and that was probably partly why a few of us, or all of us in that press conference room, were jolted by it, because it did sound like Sancho, but he definitely said Sergio. So sometimes the waters can get muddied. And I think that day it was on the rolling ticker on Sky Sports News. Jadon Sancho is back in the Manchester United squad, and I'm sure we'll get onto it shortly. But Sky yesterday seemed to be the only ones who were under the impression that Anthony Martial was in line for a new contract, when that really is not the case.
And the transfer morning show is interesting now on Sky Sports, but that's a story for another day. We'll stick with Sancho briefly then, Samuel. I mean, an assessment of the situation. I think reports in Germany have suggested it's going to be around €3 million, the loan package overall. It's a very low risk, high reward move, I think, for Dortmund, because they're getting the player who they do know, who, yes, he has regressed in his years at United, but if he hits the ground running and can return to the levels he produced when he was playing in the Bundesliga, then it could be a very good move for them. He'll be there for 6 months until the end of the season. What do you think about it? Can he return to that level? Because he's just not performed in a red shirt, unfortunately. We've got into him at lengths on this podcast over the years. I had extremely high hopes from when he came to England. I mean, he was fantastic playing for Dortmund. He established himself as quite literally one of Europe's finest young talents alongside Erling Haaland at the time and Jude Bellingham. You look at what they've done with their respective careers since then, but it just hasn't happened for Sancho. And also, Samuel, I think the point is to make, I think United are probably making the best of a bad situation, because you're getting a player off the books that is earning high wages. He is going to have friends in the dressing room and naturally a few sympathisers with his situation. It's not healthy to have him around Carrington, is it? So they needed to get him out there in the January window.
The last time he'd have possibly, no, not quite the last time. I think it would have been because he started in the Dublin friendly, but I think he did start against Dortmund in the Las Vegas friendly. And I think the Dortmund social media team got some decent clips out of him reuniting with Marco Reus and other players and staff he knew from his time at the club. But it's, however way you look at it for Sancho, it's not a good look. Jude Bellingham's not going to be going back to Dortmund. Erling Haaland is not going to be going back to Dortmund. Dortmund, who really bottled it in the title race last season on the final day when they should have actually won it ahead of Bayern Munich, they're fifth this season. They're not going to win the title. Again, I think there's something like might be 15 points off top. I think obviously Bayer Leverkusen is still the team that top. Xabi Alonso is doing a brilliant job there, but it is still quite early in the season. I don't think they're quite even at the halfway stage in the Bundesliga while they're having this winter break at the moment. But for him to go back to Dortmund with his tail between his legs, although he may find happiness there, and I'm sure he will, and Dortmund will be happy to have him back and they'll see it as a bit of a coup, but really it doesn't reflect particularly well on Dortmund or Sancho, and that they're trying to rekindle something there. And very much the priority for them, of course, is going to be to qualify for the Champions League, which is still doable, even though they're fifth in the Bundesliga. But trying to, it's not even, you know, harking back to past glories, because I think the only thing that Sancho won in Germany was the German Cup. I don't think they ever, during his time at the club, got really close to laying a glove on Bayern Munich in terms of going for the Bundesliga title either. So it's a marriage of convenience, and it suits United that one of these clubs who Sancho was, you know, keen to join. I think if Steve Cooper was still at Forest, that might have been a goer, but when Cooper was sacked by Forest last month, I think the instinct there was that door had closed. So that was probably his only route back to route to a Premier League club. But that in itself says it all. I mean, you know, there's a European Championship coming up in the summer, and okay, Sancho, the majority of his games, his caps attained with England have been while he was playing for Borussia Dortmund. So there's still a route back into the squad if he's playing regularly. But I think realistically, his goose is cooked with England. I don't think he's probably got 0.01% chance of getting in the Euro squad, even if he does play regularly and play well for Dortmund, because there are so many brilliant attacking options that Gareth Southgate has, and the majority of them play in the Premier League. And while it's good for England to have, I mean, their two best players arguably play for Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, which is brilliant given how insular generally English footballers can be and have been. And Sancho, look, he was a trailblazer. You only have to look at Haaland going to Dortmund, Bellingham going to Dortmund, Jamal Musiala, who I've watched him twice in person this season, been very lucky to, and he's just tremendous. He's brilliant to watch. And of course, he made that journey from Chelsea to Bayern Munich. You've got Blino Gittins, I think, at Dortmund as well, who's taken that same path from City to Dortmund.
We watched him at Lee Sports Village, actually, Samuel, I think you remember.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, and he was terrific against United's under-19s in the youth league. I was really impressed with him, and he's making waves at Dortmund. So, yeah, there's possible mentoring that Sancho could have there. But that area of Germany and Gelsenkirchen, it's got quite high. I think the average age of residents there is quite high. It's not a place where young people really settle. So it's not ideal for Sancho, but it's not a bad get out at this stage of his career and at this stage of the season, given that the first 4 months have been an absolute write-off. And I do hope for his sake that he rebuilds his career and he does well at Dortmund, but it's in United's interest that he does well at Dortmund, because then that does create a market for him in the summer, whether he rejoins Dortmund permanently or he moves to another club.
Yeah, it can only help his resale value, can't it, if he performs well at Dortmund. Yeah. A little bit of transfer housekeeping then as well for Kunda Pelestri. There's a bit of loan interest in him, if you want to expand on that. Yeah. Dan as Gore always. As well. Yeah, interest from Preston on loan. He's obviously made his debut just in September. And Charlie McNeil has just returned back from Stevenage as well. We expected him to be recalled after he's been left out a few squads, unfortunately. The move hasn't really worked out.
I don't think he's played since September. No, I think he scored on his debut, and then his last start may well have been in September. So I'm not too sure what happened there. But as you just alluded
I mean,
to,
I don't think Stevenage were expected to perform as well as they have this season. They're actually flying at the top of the division, in and about to the playoff position. So that's obviously made it difficult for McNeil to get a game.
Yeah, and sometimes that happens in certainly at the Football League level, that a club will come out from nowhere and suddenly they'll be the pace setters or they'll be right up there. I mean, Ipswich having a tremendous season in the Championship. They're second still, I think, to Leicester, and they only got promoted. They only got promoted last season, and there's every chance they'll get back-to-back promotions, which of course reflects extremely well on the job Kieran McKenna is doing there. I mean, this time of year, there are always some academy players who head out on loan. In the case of Gore, United have got midfielders coming back in January in Casemiro. Mason Mount is back on the grass as well. Kobbie Mainoo is fit. McTominay is obviously been fit for most of the season. I know Sofyan Amrabat has gone to AFCON with Morocco. Christian Eriksen is fit again. So that's five senior midfielders. I think it's fair to regard Mainoo as a senior squad member now, who are ahead of Dan Gore. So I think there's a chance that does happen. But we did see with James Garner about 4 years ago that I think it was Garner and Dylan Levitt at the time, they were eager to go out on loan, but United said, no, it's not quite right for you. This is not the right time. And it was delayed. And look, it's worked out well for Garner. He's having a terrific career. And in fairness to Dylan Levitt, although he's not reached the same heights, he's still a Wales international and he's doing pretty well and having a decent career elsewhere, if not in the upper echelons of the English football. Joe Hugel is another one we've spoken about at length. I think at the moment it would probably be remiss of United to let him go, because Anthony Marshall's been out of the fold for 3.5 weeks. Rasmus Højlund is the only out-and-out striker available to United. He, of course, was absent at Nottingham Forest. So United always maintain they will do what's best for, you know, the interests of the club come first, even though they're conscious that academy players need to go and get game time. It's important for them. Hugel's now 20 as well, which just seems to have, you know, it doesn't seem that long ago that he actually joined United from Sunderland, and he was excellent in his first season in the academy. But all of a sudden, it seems like he's turned 20 quite quickly, and he's still not had a kick in senior football, and he's going to be chomping at the bit. Understandably, it sounds like he'll get a new contract as part of any arrangement as well, which happens quite often with academy players when they go out on loan. I think it did happen with James Garner, happened with Deshaun Bernard as well. Ten Hag's indicated that there'll be a goalkeeper who goes out on loan, where Andre Onana is, of course, about to head on to AFCON. I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit shortly. United will probably not be as inclined to send out two or three goalkeepers on loan this month. Sometimes that does happen. There are a number of keepers that head out. But Radek Vitek has done a lot of training with the first team. But I'm surprised to see that he's not actually played very often for the under-21s this season. I mean, I'm sure you can shed some light on that. It seems like it's been Eli Harrison and Dermot Mee who've had the bulk of the games there. But I think Harrison will probably be the youth cup keeper, or remain the youth cup keeper, I should say. And one of Mee or Vitek will go out on loan, as Ten Hag indicated.
Yeah, Harrison's really highly regarded. Just 17, and he always impressed me. He's good with his feet as well. That kind of modern ball playing goalkeeper. And at this rate, I think Vitek might make a debut before Bayern, dear. Well, lad comes from Turkey, and Anna's just playing more games, isn't he? Doesn't want to go to AFCON as soon as we thought he would. Anyways, we'll leave it there for part one, Samuel. Sorry, go on.
I forgot Pelestri there. I mean, with Pelestri, it seems like every month there is interest in taking him on loan, because from what we've all seen, he looks a pretty good footballer, and he's a starter for Uruguay. And I think he would have probably gone on loan in the summer had Ahmad not got injured. Where he got injured, I think, against Arsenal in New Jersey, that was late July, and Pelestri did quite well in the final friendly against against Athletic Bilbao in Dublin. From that point on, it seemed like he was definitely going to stay, but he's I don't think he's had a start since September. He had a few starts in September, and the last was against Crystal Palace in that defeat. But you think of Facundo Pellistri at United, you just think he's an impact sub, and he has fulfilled that job quite well. And I still think United, given that Sancho's going, when you look at their forwards, it's not a case that they're teaming with forwards now. That there is a case of keeping Pellistri and keeping Ahmad, especially when the other right-sided forward is Antony. I suspect that when the fans do their panel on our websites, they do for every game, there's every chance that Ahmad will be in the fans' 11 for the Wigan game on Monday.
I feel like Pellistri's big chance was against Bayern Munich at the Allianz Arena. He got that start, didn't he?
He probably should have scored, shouldn't he, as well?
Yeah, he definitely should have.
At 0-0 where he Alphonso Davies did very well, but Pellistri needed to commit that little bit more. And if he did do, the ball probably hits him, goes in, and then it's maybe a sliding doors moment in his United career, as you say.
Ironically, I think Ten Hag said Alphonso Davies was a poor defender before kickoff on that game, and then Davies goes and pulls it out of the fire, which was an excellent clearance. Anyways, that'll be it for part one. We'll be back in a moment for part two.
We're launching a brand new bite-sized midweek audio-only podcast, bringing you the latest happenings from Old Trafford in a much more informal format. Covering topical news, online gossip, transfers and personal tales as a roundup of everything you might have missed surrounding Manchester United. Join host Tyrone Marshall and myself, Rich Fay, as we go inside the club, separating the fact from the fiction and giving you an edge on your mates down the pub.
Welcome back to part two of the Manchester is Red podcast. Now, as promised, Samuel, we'll get into the contract situations in a little bit more depth. Obviously, we discussed Martial and Varane there. Martial is obviously still expected to leave the club, and Varane is not guaranteed to be offered a new contract. And as you mentioned, Ten Hag was asked about that at yesterday's press conference, which took place on Thursday. We're recording this podcast on a Friday morning. But Ten Hag said that United, this is a direct quote, are talking with Rafa Varane and with Anthony Martial. I presume your eyebrows were raised when that was said.
I don't think they were raised as such. It was just, why is he saying that? Because that has become another one of his stock phrases. He was using it about, I think when I asked about the players who had these extension options last month, he said, we're talking to them. And at the time I'm thinking, why are you talking to them? You don't have to. You can just literally pull a player to side in training and tell them, we've extended your contract until next year. You're a valuable squad member, of course. And we'll reassess your future in the summer. We'll go from there. I mean, it shouldn't even take 5 minutes. It can be done in possibly 5 seconds if you talk quickly enough. It's United's right to extend these contracts. If they want to keep a player, and the maximum expiry dates in the players' contracts as well, then United should do that. They are protecting their asset. There is resale value in Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Victor Lindelof and Hannibal Mejbri. As we all know, I wrote in October that the plan was to extend those players' contracts, and also the plan was to release Martial if there wasn't a taker for him in the January transfer window. And it looks like it's going that way. But then the waters are muddied by what Ten Hag says. And some people in that room, some people watching, will take him at face value and think that, oh, Anthony Martial's in line to get a new contract. And as I said earlier, Sky Sports News thought that was the case and appeared to dedicate a segment to their sheer surprise that someone who's not completed 90 minutes in the Premier League for nearly 3 years, someone who's scored 18 United goals in the last 3.5 years, could and is coming out of contract at the end of the year and won't have his current contract extended, could get a new contract. I mean, sometimes you've just got to, it's not even educated guesswork. It's just, look at something sensibly rather than taking the manager at face value. But ultimately, they saw and listened to what Ten Hag said. and took him at face value. And that's where the confusion came. And in the end, that I think Sky had tweeted a video of it, but they deleted it because someone at United flagged it to them like, no, this is not the case. But it really shouldn't have to be spelt out. You shouldn't need a guidebook for contract extensions for dummies, but it feels like that's the way it's been. I mean, at the start of this week, United will have known that there's no game. It's January transfer window. The Ineos stake is being is a way to regulatory approval. Ratcliffe is coming over. Brailsford is coming over. We also knew that it was inevitable that these contracts that they extended, the three that they triggered the extensions in, that that was going to happen. So just tell us, those three players are having their contracts extended. Those two players aren't. Here's some context on it. January transfer window, Reguilón's going back to Tottenham. Van der Beek's going on loan. They were quite prompt with that, in fairness, as well, on New Year's Day. Sancho, of course, they've been helpful with as well. But it just felt like with the contract extensions, they've been so opaque about it. When, as I said, I did a line back in October, which made it pretty clear what was going to happen, and that has what's happened with the three contracts extended, and what is almost certainly going to happen with Martial. And United's point with Martial is that because he is one of two out and out strikers, which, I mean, just again, it just highlights the bad decision making that goes on at the club. They don't want to essentially cut him down to size when he could have a role to play this season. Yes, technically he could have a role to play once he's fit again, because he is the backup striker to Højlund. And we've seen already how overburdened Højlund has been, and someone needs to shoulder that burden. And unfortunately for him, nobody has. And I don't think anybody is expecting Martial to either. And it's just United's luck that, like in the summer, he is unavailable when the transfer window is open. So as it stands, he's unsellable. And even if he was fit, there are a very small, it's a small percentage of clubs in the January transfer window who are going to be in for Anthony Martial, who want to sign Anthony Martial on a permanent basis. And it's really got to be a permanent basis, because this is the last window United have to obtain a fee for him. Varane is different. It's a bit more like De Gea, in that United do not believe that he is worthy of the current salaries on beyond this season. So that's why they don't want to trigger the extension. Otherwise, he would stay on the same salary. But as it stands, I mean, United are eighth in the Premier League table. If they don't finish in the top four, if they don't qualify for the Champions League, then everyone gets a salary reduction next season. That's just the way it works. That was one of the reasons why Ronaldo wanted out, because his salary was cut by 25%. And that's commonplace with other clubs as well, of course. If players stay at a club that gets relegated, there's going to be a salary reduction there because it's written into the contract. But with Varane, I don't think it's necessarily more surprising that United haven't triggered the extension in his deal, because his brittleness is a problem. He's missed games for five different reasons already this season. He had a couple of spells on the sidelines last season. He was particularly injury prone in his first season as well. He turns 31 in March. United will sign a new centre half in the summer, and there are other players in that department who are younger than him. But Varane can also look at it and say, well, you know, Victor Lindelof's only, he's something like 16 months older than Varane, and he's not a World Cup winner. He's not won the Champions League. It's been a while since he was considered a starter for Manchester United. When Varane is fit and playing well, he's a starter for United. We've seen that in the last month since he came back into the team against Bayern Munich and Liverpool. So I can see it from both sides with the Varane one.
Where do you personally stand on it then, Samuel, if you had to give your opinion on it? I mean, you just laid it bare there. Unfortunately, it's probably 50-50 at the moment of the last 18 months or so when he has been available. He has struggled for fitness a lot of the times. He's picked up little niggles, different injuries. He has returned back to the team in recent weeks. Obviously, he was out omitted for tactical reasons, or that's what Ten Hag said anyways. And you're right, he has performed. Liverpool is fantastic at Anfield. But it's probably the right decision, is it not? When a player is on such high wages, he turns 31 in April, to not offer another contract.
I think when you weigh it up, it is logical what United are doing. I think it may be, it possibly looks strange because the Liverpool performance is so fresh in the memory. And on his day, he is still United's best defender. And last season, he was one of, I'd say he was one of their top five performers. You saw what happened in the run-in when he got injured against Sevilla in the first leg. United were 2-0 up in that first leg when Varane went off. They end up losing it 5-2 on aggregate. And all five goals come with Varane off the pitch, of course. And when he came back into the team, they won quite doggedly at Bournemouth. They got the job done in the games they needed to. And they were a much more resolute defensive side while he was out. They were a bit shaky and they lost a few games. That said, Luke Shaw came in and did very well, although Shaw was more of a direct replacement for Martinez because he was coming in as the left-footed centre-back. So I can understand where it's come from. It's just, I think the problem that United have got there is that, and this is a very big problem if you're in the comms department there, when he signed, they communicated the wrong expiry date on his contract, which is what they did when Matic signed a new contract in 2020. It beggars belief that the biggest, the most valuable, I suppose now, the most valuable sports entity on the planet can miscommunicate the expiry date of a player's contract. And that's what happened with Nemanja Matic, and it's what happened with Varane when he signed for the club. So that's where United don't come out of it particularly well. But the process they've gone in terms of deciding not to extend his contract, even though, I mean, I don't think Varane's going to toss it off for the rest of the season because he's probably far too professional to do that. But you do run that risk of him being demotivated for the run-in if he knows that he's not going to be there next season.
But especially after the first 6 months that he's had. I mean, Johnny Evans has been starting over him for a lot of time. And then if you add that into the equation as well, it's almost the perfect storm, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know for certain he was affronted by that period where I think he started one game in 13 and he was available for the vast majority of those matches as well. I think he only may have missed a couple of them through, lack of full fitness was one reason and illness was another one. But in fairness to Evans, he's the way it's going at the moment, he could actually have the Sir Matt Busby Player of the Year statue on his mantelpiece in the summer. He has done well for United this season, and the pair of them did very well in the draw against Liverpool. They've shown reasonable, I think promise is probably the wrong word for a partnership that has a combined age of 66 now that Evans has just turned 36. But as you said, that's something else that comes into the equation. And I think the way it's going, he'll just leave on a free in the summer. But he certainly does. He wants to stay at the club beyond the closure of the January transfer window, even though he is free, of course, to agree a pre-contract with an overseas club.
Regarding any potential incomings, then January is always usually a quiet window as far as Manchester United is concerned, isn't it? Really, I mean, the loan market will be considered, but it looks unlikely to get a permanent signing this month but frankly, that's just not how the club operates, and they've spent a ton of money in the last two summers.
Well, in fairness, the most possibly the three most consequential, or three of the most consequential signings United have made in the last 10 years have come in January. Juan Mata 10 years ago was a club record signing. Alexis Sanchez in 2018, that was a huge story, especially as everyone expected him to go to Manchester City. And in 2020,
and because of his
Fernandes,
piano playing skills. Sorry, Sam, I remember his piano. Yes, that was the story of that January window.
described by Richard Arnold as iconic. yeah, we'll leave Excellent. It there on that one. And of course, with Bruno Fernandes in 2020, and whatever you think of him, he has been United's best signing since Robin van Persie in 2012. So they are always open. I think they're more open to doing business than they make out. United always downplay things. I remember in the summer when we were going into the last week of the transfer window, United said that they weren't expecting to do anything, and then they signed four players on deadline day. I think the interesting thing, looking it up the other day, is that on Ten Hag's watch, United have signed six players on loan. They signed six players on loan in the, I think it's something like the 25 years before Ten Hag was appointed, that was how rare they went into the loan market, but they've been a lot more active there with Ten Hag. Obviously, one of those players has already gone, their loan has already ended in Sergio Reguilón. I found it very strange, the whole, you know, thank you, Sergio. I mean, someone at United told me he did well when he came in. I don't think anyone would agree with that whatsoever. I mean, he was game, certainly, but my God, he was gettable. He was a dreadful, dreadful defender. He was, you know, he was energetic.
He looked like exactly what he was, didn't he? Like a backup Spurs fullback.
It's worse than that. He was third choice Tottenham left back. Maybe worse than that if you were to put Perisic in there as well, given that he can play as a wing back. But he was not a good signing. But then again, United needed an 11th hour left back, and he was an option. But the writing was on the wall for him quite some time ago when Diogo Dalot was starting over him at left back, which has been an experiment that has not gone particularly well. But I think there's, you know, when we've watched Reguilón play in his last couple of starts, I think his last two starts for United might have been Bournemouth and Newcastle in the League Cup, 2-3-0 defeats, and he was really poor in both of them. So with Shaw not out for the long term, or so United say, and Tyrell Malacia supposedly coming back soon, although there's. Yeah, I know. Well, I was just about to say as well, there's not been any imagery or footage of him on the grass in training. So I think the mid-January return date is looking quite optimistic and unrealistic.
Yeah, he's obviously had two rounds of knee surgery. So hopefully when he comes back, he can return to some sort of form, because it is always tricky to return from those problems. We'll leave it there for part two then, Simon. We'll be back in a moment for part three.
No one covers Manchester United quite like the Manchester Evening News. And through our MUFC Pro app, you can support our journalism and become part of our United community, getting the best experience ad-free, pop-up free, and distraction-free as well, giving you the best news and interviews, great features, and much more. Now is the perfect time to subscribe, as we've just launched a special New Year offer, which includes MEN Premium for just £12 for 12 months. Download the app and get started today.
Welcome back to part three of the Manchester Is Red podcast. Now, Samuel, a nice little visit to Carrington. Was it today or yesterday? You'll keep
it was
right
yesterday,
on the photos. Yesterday,
yes.
With Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Sir Dave Brailsford obviously going into Carrington, meeting staff, etc. Some lovely photos with Ten Hag and the players. And if I can get a girlfriend the way that Sir Jim Ratcliffe looks at Rasmus Højlund, I think I'll be a very happy man, because he had a big wide grin on his face, Ratcliffe did. Looking at Højlund thinking, you're going to score a lot of goals for me in the future. But look, in all seriousness, I mean, the Glazers have been awful custodians, very absent. They never really communicate. And it's just really encouraging to see Ratcliffe and Brailsford just about the place, Samuel. And I think that's a huge thing for fans. They obviously had a meeting with staff as well. I think it was at Old Trafford. So it is really early days and still a long way to go. But there is some really encouraging signs and they're making some positive steps.
Yeah, I think it was Wednesday that they were there, not yesterday. I mean, the press conference room did change to this. It's a bit of a broom cupboard, really, in the main building. So I half wonder if something was going on up in the usual room in the Jimmy Murphy Centre that overlooks the training pitches. But as you said, I think the last Farlon photo of Joel Glazer at Carrington is dated March 2013. So it's so far back that Sir Alex Ferguson was still managing United. Joel Glazer's not been to Manchester in coming up to 5 years. I think that whole, the annoyance that fans have had over Joel Glazer, that can end now, because he's not overseeing football operations. It's going to be the Ineos group, and that's why Ratcliffe has been to Manchester this week, and why Sir Dave Brailsford is becoming a more frequent visitor at the training ground. And it's, you know, I was told earlier in the week that, you know, it was just kind of like a way of introducing themselves to the wider staff at Carrington, Old Trafford, which is essential. And of course, when we were told that they were going to Carrington, then logically you assume that they were going to meet Ten Hag meet the players, and they've done that, men's players and women's players as well. It's an open goal for United, and it's an open goal for Ratcliffe as well. I mean, I don't think I'm the sartorial expert that I could be, but his scarf does look like it might be a Paul Smith United themed scarf. It's got the United colours on it.
I've got a Paul Smith top on now as we record there, Samuel.
You may know better than me. I've got some Paul Smith items, but maybe not as modern as your one. So you might be the expert on that. And it will just, you know, we need to obviously, once the Ineos group have received the regulatory approval, then I'm sure Ratcliffe will speak on the record because it's in his interest, or Brailsford will. It would be curious to see how Brailsford goes about his job.
I was just about to say that, Samuel, because we don't really know yet what his role is going to be in terms of a defined role. It's going to be interesting because obviously Jean-Claude Blanc, yes, the CEO, and you kind of see the structure that way. Jean. There will be a sporting director. Jean-Claude Blanc.
You must have done French GCSE, Samuel.
So
come on, you must have had posters of David Ginola up on your wall, I also got a B at French GCSE as well. But
it is an interesting point, isn't it? Because he is obviously very visible at the moment. He's at games, he's at Nottingham Forest, been at Old Trafford, but we don't actually know what his defined role is going to be. Could that murky the waters a bit?
Well, they'll bring clarity to that eventually when they appoint a sporting director. And let's face facts, Brailsford is not going to be the guy in charge of recruitment at United. He's the Ineos sporting director. He's obviously going to be on the United board. That was confirmed in those very lengthy biblical filings that were published at full time on Boxing Day of the Villa match. So I think he's essentially just going to be, you know, if it's Dan Ashworth who comes in or whoever comes in, they'll report to Dave Brailsford. And of course, you know, it's logical for a sporting director. I mean, it does feel extremely niche that a petrochemicals company have a sporting director. But of course, Ineos have all these sporting ventures in cycling, football, sailing as well. They've dabbled in marathon running even. So, you know, Brailsford is clearly, you know, quite familiar with how football clubs are run from Nice and is it Saint Lausanne in Switzerland, as well, who Ineos own. But I mean, this is a completely different level. And as I said, so Dave Brailsford, the reason why he got a knighthood is for his work in cycling and making Team GB, you know, these gold medal specialists at the Olympics.
Well, it's fascinating when you look into it.
Won all the Tour de France's.
All the 1% marginal gains thing, that was so popular in the mid, kind of, I mean, 2010, 2011, the run up to the London 2012 Olympics. He was credited with a lot of the success. But I think a bit further on after that, Bradley Wiggins came out and kind of rubbished the theory and played down Brailsford's influence, which is really interesting. So it's not always been as straightforward as it seems, because it was bigged up quite a bit.
No, and obviously Wiggins received a therapeutic use exemption to win the Tour de France in 2012 with Team Sky after, I think, was it the Fancy Bears, the Russian hackers? They discovered that info, and of course Brailsford has been embroiled in the infamous Jiffy bag case regarding what was sent and what was in it, and Dr. Richard Freeman, who used to be the doctor at Team Sky, he was struck off. But Brailsford is this great survivor, and it was interesting that David Walsh, who is obviously the chief sports writer of the Sunday Times, he was ushered into the fold at Team Sky to do a book on them about 10 years ago. And he wrote a lacerating piece about Brailsford in October, I think it was. I think he felt a bit, you know, duped, given that Wiggins had a TUE. Chris Froome won a number of Tour, he won, what was it, 4 or 5 Tour de France's, I think it was. And, you know, there was suspicion over that. A lot of observers were sceptical of it, given the history of the Tour de France as well, and particularly Lance Armstrong. That's not to say that Team Sky weather, you know, found to have been doping at all. That's not been the case whatsoever. But there has been a lot of suspicion around Dave Brailsford, and he was before a select committee, I think just over 5 years ago, where he was, you know, he had been very well trained in a PR sense to give the right responses. And here he is now rubbing shoulders with Sir Jim Ratcliffe and overseeing the possible transformation of Manchester United. But I maintain, I'm fascinated to see how someone whose wheelhouse is cycling is going to transform, revamp, do whatever phrase you want to use, Manchester United into a credible force again in a completely different sport. It's, I mean, Ben Ainslie, who's obviously, you know, knows Ratcliffe from financing his quest to win the America's Cup. He referred to United as the greatest challenge in sport, possibly, which is a pretty good description. It's quite a onerous one as well. It's an onerous challenge for Dave Brailsford. But I maintain, you know, this, I mean, going back to David Walsh's piece in October, it was scathing also of what's happened to the Ineos Grenadiers, which is the cycling team that used to be known as Team Sky. I mean, it sounds like the wheels have fallen off there. And now this guy who's overseen that is about to take on the challenge of trying to get Manchester United back to the top. So, you know, the marginal gains and everything, as you said, it was on vogue in the early 2010s. And I think some, you know, I think there were probably a few people who were a bit sceptical of it at the time. I mean, Team Sky used Dr. Steve Peters, who was then used by Ronnie O'Sullivan, and the England team as well used him. And I think in 2014, it was a bit of a annus horribilis because Ronnie O'Sullivan went out early in the Snooker World Championships, and England, of course, went out of the World Cup at the group stage, something like that. And of course, he was also, I think Stephen Gerrard was a great advocate of him, and that was the year where Stephen Gerrard said,
"Don't let it slip.
This does not slip." Yeah. And then he let it slip for Denver Bar.
And what a moment that was at Anfield. I suggested on a podcast, I think 2 months ago maybe, that there could be a little bit of friction coming about Samuel with Ratcliffe and the kind of transfer control and how it's going to work with Ten Hag. And I think you and Tyrone kind of played it down and went, look, at the end of the day, they both want the same thing. Ten Hag wants to succeed. Ratcliffe wants to succeed. It should be a perfect marriage. But he's probably going to have to relinquish a little bit of control because we know he's had quite a lot of influence over transfers. Obviously, does work with John Murta, with signings, but we've said it multiple times, that squad is very much his squad. His fingerprints are all over it. And there's a lot of Dutch pedigree in that squad at the moment. When you look back at all the players, I think 6 of the 10 players he signed on permanent deals have played in Eredivisie. And obviously, Ten Hag's had a meeting with Ratcliffe. He said it's been very positive. But could we see that down the line a little bit? Do you reckon that has a bit of potential? Because I definitely think it does. I mean, I think that could happen.
There's no way they can operate the way they have in the past 2 summer transfer windows, because you only have to look at the success rate of the signings. I'd say there's been one truly successful signing in Lisandro Martinez, and this season so far it's been a write-off for him. this season has been a write-off for him. So if you were going off that traffic light system Gary Neville did of green, amber, red of United signings, post Ferguson, you probably wouldn't put him in green just because he's not had a second season yet, Martinez. And I remember Ed Woodward telling us about 4.5 years ago that United's aim was to get have a 70% success rate with recruitment. I'm surprised maybe someone else hadn't done it sooner, but I got round to actually doing the calculations for it and being objective as possible. And of course, with signings, it can be subjective. There are going to be some people who think, how can you put Paul Pogba in red? Which sounds crazy, but some people think he was quite good for United. He was quite good at times. He was not a good signing. You know, it goes beyond the pitch in terms of a player's impact and influence at a club. But the success rate, if we are to be really kind, is something like 7%. And Woodward was talking of 70%. I mean, that in itself is cause for a number of people at the club, if they are still responsible for some of those deals, to pack up their desks and clear off and go elsewhere, because they're not up to it and they have not been up to it. Now, John Murta has overseen these 2 summer transfer windows, and I was told last month that he never saw himself as going into recruitment. And I thought, well, perhaps he should have told United that, or perhaps United should have done more due diligence and hired an external candidate rather than someone who's on their doorstep. And the irony is, the one outright signing that Murta really pushed for was Casemiro, and he was, his influence last season was huge. It's gone badly. It's gone all right this season for him, but that reflected well on Murta at the time, even though when he signed, you thought, crikey, look at how much they've paid for a 30-year-old. Look how much his wages are going to cost United as well. And this season, it's kind of panned out as a lot of us feared it would have in the first season for Casemiro. But you look at the other signings, Mason Mount has not turned up. He's been a mismatch with whoever he's played with in midfield. He was dropped in September or October. He's been played on the right. He's been played with different players. He's looked wholly unsuited to Manchester United. He's an England international who joined United in the summer when so many England internationals got major transfers. James Maddison was probably the best player in the Premier League before he got injured. Harry Kane is probably still the best striker in the world. Jude Bellingham is probably the best player in the world. Declan Rice is one of the best players in the Premier League. Who do United get? They get the guy who's already been bombed out of the England squad and has been dropped by United and had two lengthy layoffs through injury this season. It's not a coincidence this always happens with United. And that's why there has to be a root and branch review of recruitment. And really, you have to get to the root of it and possibly rip it all up. And Ten Hag cannot have the control that he's had. And fair enough, he wanted Harry Kane in the summer and United took this, you know, rather peculiar principal decision not to go for him and then signed someone who was 10 years younger. And there's every chance that Kane will end this season with more club goals in this season alone that Rasmus Højlund has scored in his entire career. That is just bad planning. They needed a proven goal scorer. They got a potential goal scorer in. And they were talking in the summer about he might come out of the team at times and Marcus Rashford would play up front, as if they think that Marcus Rashford is a dependable centre forward. When two games into the season, Ten Hag decided, right, you've got to go back to the left because it's not working there. And anyone could have told him that as well. Anthony, look, we've discussed him chapter and verse. I mean, the guy is just a write-off for United. And they overspent majorly. I think that line about, oh, he's valued at 25 million by the recruitment staff, I think that reflects badly on the recruitment staff, because there's no way that Ajax would have let a Brazil international 2 years into a 4 or 5 year contract who'd won two titles coming up in a World Cup year. No way they would have let him go for £25 million. I mean, they let Van de Beek was, his valuation came down because of COVID, but United still committed to paying £40 million for him. I think £40 million for Anthony was fair enough. And people at Ajax at the time were talking about Anthony being valued at €60 million, which I think was fair enough. And then, of course, United end up paying or committing to pay €100 million. So however way you look at it, it's not been a good process under Ten Hag. It's been a throwback to Ferguson's days. And Ferguson's days were an absolute freak, as we all know, because the man was a genius and he stayed in the position for 26 and a half years. Ten Hag is not going to stay in United for half that time, I would venture a guess at. And I found it amusing on Boxing Day that who should be in the director's box when Sir Dave Brailsford was going to be in the director's box, but Keyes Voss. And I think if you're Dave
Brailsford... Kevin Voss, as we call him on this podcast, Simon.
I think if you're Dave Brailsford, you've got to be giving that guy a swerve and limiting your interactions with him, to say the least.
Well, Ratcliffe famously called the 50 million invested in the Fred is dumb money. So it'd be fascinating to get his opinion or his private opinion on £86 million spent on Anthony. I imagine his language would be pretty colourful. It would never go on record with that, would it?
Yeah, that was worse than dumb, I think it's safe to say. And again, when that money was spent, obviously you don't want to hammer a player straight away before he's even played for the club. But we all thought at the time, we all said, like, this really needs to work for United because they've really overspent on this player. This player's played for Ten Hag as well. He's coming from a league that nobody's going to watch in their downtime. There are some really big issues with this, and look how it's panned out. I mean, he's still not got a goal or assist this season. It's that is an embarrassing transfer. And unfortunately for Anthony, he could well be remembered as the worst signing of this post-Ferguson era. He has been so bad, he's made spending nearly £100 million on Paul Pogba look like money well spent.
And that is a huge statement. We'll end there then, yeah. Samuel, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Stephen.
And just before we go, just a little note from the podcast producer. I want to turn your attention to a special Sunday show this week with United playing on Monday. Of course, I've got Wigan in the FA Cup. Seb Parkinson and Tyrone Marshall, our esteemed colleague, are going to get together and chew over the fat and the latest United news over the weekend. And we've also got a special guest, a Wigan athletic journalist, Nick Seddon, who'll give us insight from behind enemy lines into what to expect from hosts at the DW Stadium. So after that, we'll be back in the studio on Tuesday to review the game. Of course, me and Samuel will be on then, and we'll report any latest updates around the club as usual. So thank you very much, have a great weekend, and hopefully enjoy the game.